Hello, my very, very special radio listeners, and welcome to Cartoon Talk, part of the Sex Talk Omnimedia Empire. Tonight, we are doing, as of course, every first Tuesday of the month
yes.
in November
sure.
is going to be, on Election Day, is going to be Comic Talk. And tonight we have a very, very, very special guest on the show. Is our special guest on the air? Hello, special guest.
Hello, production studio.
We can't hear anything.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. And I'm just in the process of introducing you very professionally. Are we using your real name, or do you have some kind of nom de cartoon?
Nom de plume, as the French say. No, you can use my real name. That's all right.
So I should say his real name sort of sounds like a nom de plume.
Right. If we were interviewing a gay porn star on this show tonight.
Are we using both your first and last name?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so let me start.
Credits, so.
Our special guest tonight is Eric Trueheart, who is a writer on possibly the most famous, most celebrated children's and hip college student, young adult cartoon show on cable right now.
Void in Space.
I'm talking about Invader Zim on Nickelodeon.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Whenever the Hermaphrodites cancel, you can give me a call.
they're usually pretty busy, too.
You know, that's not a meaningful statement for most shows, but for us, you get into. Before we get into this, I'd like to say that now, while I don't deny that we kiss ass often on the show, we're not kissing ass when we say
yes,
that.
Yes, that's the nature of your show, isn't it?
We're not kissing ass when we say that we, at least two of the three of us, you can guess which two, are huge, huge fans of Invader Zim.
And the one who is not is, of course, my oldest and dearest friend, Corey Kosak.
That's right, although we don't usually give my last name on the show.
Oh, dear.
Too late now.
But the Hermaphrodites are going to show up outside your doorstep tonight.
No, the guest knows your name. It's the...
Uh-oh, did we lose?
Wow. WRCT, Bastion of Radio Excellence. Anyway, so perhaps for our listeners who are unfamiliar with the show, Lance and I can give a brief description of it. It's a cartoon, runs mm-hmm. on Nickelodeon. It's been running for about a year now, 2 years? I guess
no,
it's the second season.
6 months.
Okay. And it's actually, it's created by, I guess, the creative mastermind behind it all, this guy named Jonan Vasquez, who is a comic book artist.
I'll be calling in. I gave him the station number, so he might be calling in. Okay. We're trying to reestablish contact, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, who did comic books like Johnny and the Homicidal Maniac and Squee, which were kind of big underground hits.
Yes, most famous for Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, which has become a veritable goth bible of comics. So the basic idea behind the show is that it's an odd mix because it's on Nickelodeon, so it has to be a kids' show, although it's only on at 9 p.m. on Friday nights. And for Nickelodeon, it has have we reestablished contact with our alien
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Excellent.
What the hell kind of operation are you running over there?
You don't want to know.
Okay.
Wait, this is the leather line, right?
Is this 976 Kosak? I'm sorry, you must get that joke all the time.
No, he doesn't, because no one knows his real name.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, either too.
Corey Johnson.
So anyway, we were trying to give our ignorant audience like a little bit of background on Invader Zim for
Big Johnson.
Yeah, I didn't hear it, so I could say it, but I may have saying exactly the same things you have said. It's on the Nickelodeon.
Yeah, but you wouldn't stumble and say as much. So
well, we mentioned it's about this girl who lives in the Southern California who fights vampires, right?
Yeah,
that's what my notes
and
say.
And actually, no, you know, you're thinking of the Powerpuff Girls, aren't
right,
you?
Right,
actually
okay.
about a wilderness family that travels to the jungle, and the young girl is actually completely insane. She thinks she's hearing animals talking, and at the end of every episode, she picks up a knife and ends up stabbing somebody. It's a very funny show and heartwarming.
You know, it's one of these shows that really grows on you. The second or third time you see her stab her family to death,
yeah.
Oh man,
and
I can't stop
laughing.
Is she hot?
And no explanation, and yet we somehow know that's the way it should be.
Boy, it sounds better than 24. I mean, sort of.
Well, it's no Kiefer Sutherland on that show, but.
Like, the thing is, we're alienating our three remaining listeners.
I know. I'm sorry. Invader Zim. Well, is a show on Nickelodeon that, by all rights, should not be on Nickelodeon.
As we were kind of explaining, yeah.
It's created by Jonan Vasquez, who is creator of the gothic hit comic book Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. Mm. So it can give you some idea of what Nickelodeon was thinking when they knocked at his door, which is to say there is not enough homicide on our network.
So Nickelodeon came to him, actually?
Well, one of Nickelodeon's producers came named him, Mary Harrington, who has worked with Nickelodeon since the Ren and Stimpy days. Mm-hmm. She's pretty much an independent contractor, but she's like their little maverick who'll go out and find things that actually, you know, are interesting.
So when Nickelodeon finally does make the leap into porn, you're saying she's probably going to pave the road.
Oh, she will spearhead that, though you didn't hear me say that, and I just want you to know that Nickelodeon is the number one network for kids.
Kids have needs, too.
Well, I can't comment on that because my job is on the line.
Okay, but back to Invader, back to Invader Zim.
Yes. Oh, right, me.
Right, big, fat, beautiful you.
Big, so, fat, beautiful me.
So were you...
We have the unique position of being on 9 o'clock on Fridays, which means nobody who would watch our show is watching our show. I mean, we have a big following among kids, but I think we have a very large and vocal secret audience of among college stoners. our show is – it's
– got a thumbs up from at least
one of our producers just acknowledged that he's part of that audience.
Well, now,
dude!
Well, you know, you join the elite crowd of, like, you know, Space Ghost Coast to Coast and –
the new Mayor Kate and Ashley show.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, what's that Samurai Jack show? Is that one of those hip college shows?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Samurai Jack.
Samurai Jack, yes.
Although Samurai Jack requires actually a lot more concentration.
Than Mary-Kate and Ashley? Yeah, I disagree. I think there's a lot of layers in Mary-Kate and Ashley.
It does take a lot of brain power to tell them apart. Like, is Mary-Kate the quiet, sensitive one, or is Ashley the...
That's quiet, right. Sensitive one.
Right. Yeah. And since every other episode revolves around them impersonating each other.
Right.
For some
I
sort
never
of...
get tired of that, though. In all honesty, I have never seen the show. I'm sure it is a very fine show created and produced by very professional people who are masters of their craft.
That's very polite of you to say that, considering that it airs on one of your arch-rival networks, Fox Family.
Oh, is that one of our arch-rival networks?
I would rivals.
I can't keep track.
Or have
of
you
them.
Beaten them to such a bloody pulp they don't even count as a rival anymore?
Well, you have to understand. I mean, the environment over here is that we work on our production, the show, and, you know, sort of the larger concerns of Nickelodeon, you know, dominating the minds and hearts of kids all over the nation, you know, doesn't really touch us much.
Or maybe it's also one of these issues, like, where Nickelodeon is so high up into the stratosphere of entertainment, right? They don't even bother about the little people who may think they're rivals. Like the CMU-MIT rivalry. CMU is obsessed with it. Does anybody at MIT know? No.
I have no idea.
Well, let's see. I hate to be controlling, but I have two things to say.
But
one is that people, if they wish to talk to writer Eric Trueheart, this is probably the only chance people in Pittsburgh will ever get to talk or even come remotely in contact with them. Feel free to give us a call at
621-9728.
You have to give them the area code because it's 10-digit dialing number.
Oh, sorry. 412-621-9728. Or on the Carnegie Mellon campus, if you want to save half the digits, it's 89728. Secondly,
this is completely unplanned. I'm only here because I owe Corey a favor, and this is my payment for his silence.
Well, secondly, our audience still does think Invader Zim is actually about a little girl who runs around in the wilderness and stabs somebody every week. So.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is about a little alien who's trying to take over the world by impersonating a child and infiltrating a classroom. They're sort of the Nickelodeon-ish, comparisons. And although I will say, you know, I don't want to trash Nickelodeon. They've been very good to us, and, you know, they're taking a big risk by putting our show on the air. And if a transcript of this ever reaches an executive, I just want you to know I have the highest respect for everyone involved. But, you know, it is a much edgier show than I think they're far used to showing. We had an episode in which Zim goes around, in order to pass a physical at the nurse exam, goes around stealing the other students' organs and stuffing his body full of them. So, you know, that's not the sort of thing they're used to seeing on Rugrats.
And I remember also the testing to destruction of his new friends, like similarly perhaps not normal Nickelodeon fare where he electrocutes prospective friends. And
the testing their absorbency and whatnot.
Exactly. I mean, I think that touched all of us because, who hasn't?
Test the absorbency.
Test the absorbency.
Of a loved one.
Exactly.
Well, I know for a fact Corey has, and it's part of why I'm here tonight.
If there's a type of an object that Corey hasn't tested the absorbency on, I don't want to possess it.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of feel like I should be talking about, you know, some sort of sex thing, but I don't know if that's really my place to do that.
Well, I should warn our listeners that this is going to be one of the most non-sexual shows we've ever done.
Although we tried harnessing the vast power of Al Gore's internet.
Yeah.
Like, we did scour the web ceaselessly.
We will get to the sex, but actually, Dr. Sexopoulos and I, Lance, I don't know if Corey, DJ Corey, told you that there were other people on the show and that they had.
No, I knew there were other people. He neglected to tell me.
We're the drones. Okay. We're the little people.
Well, think of us as the little
Munchkins.
No, what's the robot on?
Gurr.
Yeah,
Gurr?
Think of us as the Gurrs to his Zim.
So you'll be swallowing furniture next, probably. Or...
and we're not quite as obsessed with tacos, right?
No, I'm as obsessed with tacos and taquitos.
Yes, really. We're really trying to branch Gurr's character out a little bit more next season. He will be obsessed also with suck monkeys, which is the local equivalent of a Slurpee.
Really?
And
you're not going to move south and get him into like pupusas and Salvadoran food. You're going to stay Mexican.
We're staying Mexican, and honestly, I mean, Jonan Vasquez, creator of the show, has gotten in trouble by putting sort of Mexican jokes in there. And the end of Walk of Doom, Jim was going to turn up by accident at Mexico.
Yeah.
And Nicolas said, "You can't do that. That's sort of offensive to Mexicans." And he said, "But I am Mexican."
Wait, going to Mexico is offensive to Mexicans?
Yeah. It's a long, long story, but Zim gets lost in a city and, you know, decide I'm finally going home, and the next shot is him and Gurr in this traditional Mexican village, you know, with like a pig's head in the meat carver's mm-hmm. window and a
right.
guy dancing with the rose in
yeah.
his teeth. And there's going to be a big sign that said, "Welcome to Mexico." And they said, you know, no way. That's, you know, don't raise the racial bugaboo.
Oh, I saw that scene, and there was a pig's head there. So instead, people think he's in Wisconsin or something?
Yeah, exactly. you know, and I understand their point of view. But, you know, that's the taquitos. You know, it's not Jonah making a cultural statement. It's him just thinking what he thinks is funny based on his background.
Well, Eric, we got to get you to shut your pie hole for just a minute. Because
we're crying out loud.
We have a caller, and on the show, the callers come first. So I don't know if you'll be able to hear the caller. I hope so.
Well, if not, you can translate.
Okay. So is the caller there?
Yep. Hello?
Welcome, caller. Thank you for calling in.
Hello.
Did you have a question, comment, or concern?
Hello?
For
actually, yeah. I actually catch the show last Friday before I went bowling.
Good. That's a good time to catch it.
And I was wondering why the hell it was on Nickelodeon.
Well, this is the question Nickelodeon asks themselves every single day. you know, like I said, it was a very, a very bold move on their part. Obviously, they, I think every time they turn us on, they're cringing at what we might try to do next. The story behind the show is that, you know, it was Mary Harrington, again, you know, Maverick produced. I don't want to say Maverick. She's, you know, worked for Nickelodeon for years, approached Jonan. They produced a pilot, which, you know, Nickelodeon tested to kids, and it was like the highest rated pilot that, you know, they'd ever had. They showed it to a bunch of kids, and kids literally wet themselves with glee, apparently.
And, what more fitting tribute could there be?
Well, I'll leave that to, you know, your jurisdiction. But basically, you know, Nickelodeon pledging their commitment to children said, well, we don't quite understand it, but kids seem to like it, so go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, probably this point, no regretting they did that. But
I've seen some of the numbers, and it's done quite well in that slot for Nickelodeon. Right?
It does do quite well in that slot. To talk frank ratings, the other places it doesn't do well is sort of any place but its regular time slot, because they'll slot it after, say, you know, Rocket Power on like Sunday afternoon, and your Rocket Power audience doesn't usually drift into Invader Zim.
And your normal audience is hungover.
Exactly, they're
and
not
out by
until 3. Yeah. So. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Well, I could also if I could perform the painful and intelligence debilitating act of putting myself in the mind of a television producer or marketing flack, right? One could say like, oh look, you know, the Cartoon Network is having so much success with things like Powerpuff Girls, and I think we've just lost sound. Is the caller still there?
Hello, yes.
Okay.
I was you know, deferring the floor to you.
No, we had a minor technical glitch that hopefully is
It happens
solved.
All the time. It's,
sorry.
Cosmic rays. Like, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Laboratory,
yeah.
Samurai Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
maybe Nickelodeon's saying, oh, we have to tap into that edgy
exactly.
cartoon
also,
market.
Well, but it's not like it really is not. It's not like it's really novel for them. I mean, they did throw Ren and Stimpy at the world, right?
It's true.
They threw Ren and Stimpy at the world back in the day, you know.
Right.
And they've, you know, back when they had a commitment to being, you know, I'll say more pioneering, and this is, again, not to cast aspersions to current executives at Nickelodeon because my job may be on the line, but they've, I think, you know, sort of pulled back a little bit on their pioneering and tried to, you know, I'll say replicate this, but create a market out of, you know, around that sort of Rugrats vibe.
Until now.
and, in fact, they had an adventure show in the pipeline which got pulled out for a reason, like a full-on Japanese anime-style adventure show they were going to, you know, that they had a pilot for, and I don't know what ended up happening to it, but I don't think it's rolling out. So they are taking chances, and good for them, and it's probably because Cartoon Network, like you said.
So let's pulling away from, like, the...
Wait, I'm not sure. We may have a second caller on the line.
Ooh.
Do we have a second caller on the line?
Is she cute?
So, I mean, we can jump right into that question. But I was actually going to pull back from the kind of drab issues of marketing and Nickelodeon's.
Yeah. Our producer's nodding at me. Do we have a caller? Or we don't have a caller?
Anyway,
I'm going to guess, and yet we don't have one.
No, we don't.
The hermaphrodite's angry about what I said earlier.
I wanted to ask, basically, so how did you – again, this is the fanboy portion of the show. How did you get involved writing for this show? You graduated from the same school that our illustrious DJ Corey did.
Yes.
So were you involved with the Harvard Lampoon? Were you
– Not at all. In fact, if I had, I probably, you know, wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. I probably would be on The Simpsons, raking in lots and lots of money.
I was going to say, why is Nickelodeon Yale dominated and they give vicious beatings to the Harvardati?
No, there's actually – it's not just – I mean, the Harvard Mafia is to an extent true, as they talk about, but it really is a Lampoon Mafia. And so it's that magical Lampoon key that gets you through the door, and which is not to say that, you know, the people who have the Lampoon key aren't talented and don't earn their way in, because everyone earns their way in one way or another. But I got through this, you know, strictly by accident. I had a partner I was pitching. I had an animated series bought – pitch for an animated series bought by Fox Animated Features, which was
that the Ninja Temp series?
That was Guy Futamaki Ninja Temp, which we were pitching as a series, me and my partner and myself. The way it works in Hollywood is that, I mean, you pitch a lot of ideas around and they'll get bought, and then oftentimes, you know, 9 times out of 10, nothing will happen to them. And unfortunately, what happened over at Fox was Titan A.E. happened, which was not the rip-roaring success they hoped, and everything they had animated in the pipeline was sort of called into question. But because I had that somewhere, I was considered somebody. I've been to USC in screenwriting. I'd written gags for Steve Odekirk, who did Thumb Wars and Thumbtanic. You know, a whole bunch of tiny little things fell together, and I ended up pitching a different series to Mary Harrington, who called me like 3 days later and said, "You want to come in and talk to pitch stuff to Zim?" And the first idea I pitched was the cartoon that ended up as Bad Bad Rubber Piggy, and I pitched to Jonan, and he just liked it, and it was weird. From that moment on, it was almost like I had some kind of job, which was shocking.
So I'd like to go back even further.
Okay.
Because, you know,
during the womb, I was subjected to my – oh, sorry.
I got to interrupt here. I'm sorry. What my co-host is alluding to, which he won't quite come out and say, is you were originally supposed to play the role of Selma in Dancer in the Dark.
Yes, that's true, and – because of certain contractual things I have signed, I'm not allowed to discuss that anymore.
But it wasn't the fake eyelash allergy? That's what.
Can you do a scene?
Look, I've already cashed the check. I can't say anything.
Wait, no, if you hadn't cashed the check, then I can imagine you not saying anything.
Oh, well.
But if you've already cashed the check, what can
I would,
you do?
You know, I'm very.
Come on, just give us a little Bjork.
Bjork is an old dear.
Everyone does Bjork on the show. You can
all
give
right,
us
but a, I will ask you to play the role of the prosecutor.
All right, fine.
Okay.
Let's see. You killed him, didn't you? Why did you kill him?
He asked me to.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's the absolutely the second most touching Bjork impersonation I think we've ever had on the show.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
I'm sorry I missed the first.
Well, no, it's all archived, trust us.
Yeah, the first one had the advantage of being female. I mean, there's perhaps some unfair.
I don't know. I think his masculinity brought a new take to the role.
Yes, that's true.
Bjork herself doesn't
know. Warren von Trier didn't feel the same way.
No, but again, I have to apologize to our listeners because Dr. Sexopoulos and I are asking these questions out of our own self-interest. How do you go from graduating from college? You moved to L.A. You want to be a screenwriter, right? What's that life like? Do you
want to hear the extremely long, extremely miserable, detailed story? Because I can tell you that.
I do.
It may bore the living hell out of you.
I do. Our guests – I actually do. Our guests probably don't. Can you give us the –
No, message? He is our guest.
Oh.
Or, sorry. No, our listeners.
Well, I mean, the short story is everyone is out there sort of wanting to make it in screenplays. Number one, you do have to live in Los Angeles. That's the ugly truth. You know, unless you're someone, you know, like Shane Black, who had a number of hits, you know, features and then just moved back to Detroit or wherever it was he lived. I mean, people sort of don't take you seriously. I mean, on some level, all of us who live in L.A. kind of don't want to, as much as we love things about it. And so if you're not willing to move to L.A., you're sort of not willing to, you know, have the badge of courage that the rest of us have. You know, what I did is when I first moved to L.A., the job I have now is a direct result of the first job I had answering phones at its cruddy little syndicated documentary show, which, you know, featured clips of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. I met a guy there who was an editor who had produced this tiny little independent show that was syndicated via satellite. He had me write stuff for him at the same time I was doing improv comedy at the Groundlings. You know, he went on to work for Steve Odekirk, who is, you know, directed Ace Ventura 2 and, you know, went on to write some, like, big-time Hollywood movies. He asked me to do some gags when, you know, he was doing Thumbtanic and Thumb Wars. Meanwhile, you know, Steve goes on to write Patch Adams, which is not his style at all, but it makes $200 million.
You don't have to tell Corey about Patch Adams.
Corey, I know how much you love Patch Adams. Corey's copy
He's
of
just
Patch
waiting
Adams
for the director's cut to come out. I hear they
it's just, you know,
it was
these,
butchered on the cutting room.
It's just so sweet the way these kids have these terminal illnesses, and Patch, the compassionate doctor with a heart of gold, comes in with his clown suit on and makes them happy by telling them humorous jokes and anecdotes.
You know who was originally up for that role? Robert De Niro.
Is that true?
Yet, no.
I thought you were going to say Bjork.
I thought he was going to say Brando.
Do a little more Bjork for it. A little more Bjork.
Oh, all right, but you have to continue to play the prosecutor.
Oh,
so
boy.
Hey, I'll pick up where we left off. You know,
he asked me to.
All right, go.
I don't know what comes next.
Can you just yell guilty?
No.
Wait, are you playing Bjork or Senor Wences?
I won't have Bjork's name, you know, maligned that way on the air.
Now I know what comes up. The prosecutor says something like, you know, he asked you, you expect this jury to believe that he asked you to? Like, what would be the reason for that, Bjork? Or something like that, doesn't
I have no idea at this point. I'm sorry. We should get back to
She said he told me it's a secret.
Oh, he told me it's a secret.
See, I haven't seen the movie in a long time.
I'm glad to see the sex talk is continuing its mission to alienate all our listeners.
We had one person call in.
So
Why don't we reiterate, you know, who we are and what we're talking about?
I suppose thanks for feeding us the lines. So you're listening to Sex Talk. We have on the line, is it Eric Trueheart?
Roxanne, I'm a hermaphrodite.
And also a writer for the world's most popular cartoon ever. Invader Zim, which is on Nickelodeon Fridays, 9 p.m. As a longtime, like, almost stalker-like fan of the show.
I was going to say, it's hilarious, like, we're actually getting out of the time, like, it's an actual functional plug. Like, people listening to the show are going to go, oh, wow.
They're going to set their TiVos, their replay TVs.
Yeah, like all six of them.
Their VCRs. I mean, since our listeners are largely stoners and shut-ins.
Yeah, I've got the Pittsburgh Collegiate pervert market, I guess.
They're not. We prefer to call them prevert, but thank you.
I understand.
I thought they were trying to claim him supervert.
No, only Corey is the true supervert.
Anyways, Dr. Sexopolis, I rudely interrupted you. I apologize.
No, I'm used to it. I was going to say, as a fan of the show, like, and also I'd been reading Jonan Vasquez's comics for years before the show came out. Mm-hmm. I've actually been startled at how closely the shows have kind of kept his aesthetic, his sense of humor, his, like, vision, if you want to use that word.
Yeah.
Like, despite the fact that he's not the writer on every episode.
No, I mean, Jonan, you know, has his, you know, his fingers, whatever you want to say. I mean, Jonan has his aesthetic into every aspect of the production.
His tentacles?
His tentacles, his slimy pseudopodia into every aspect of the production. I mean, you sort of walk the line whenever you talk about TV production, because I know there are people out there who think that, you know, Jonan sits home and draws every frame, and that's not the case at all. I mean, animation in particular is one of the most collaborative ways you can, you know.
By collaborative, you mean shipped to Korea.
Exactly. By collaborative, meaning having people underpaid in Korea, yeah, losing their eyesight to draw. I don't mean that at all. They actually have a great studio over there. Again, I say this for legal purposes, but it's true.
But I want to add, my question was, so basically, how does this happen? Is there a weekly writers' meeting where he is always there to make sure, like, no, you know, Zim would never do that. He likes the little piggies or whatever.
Or does Jonan train you with cattle prods to internalize his own stuff?
Right. Or does he transplant his organs into you to, like, take over you zombie-like?
It's a mixture of both, cattle prods and organs. Actually, we have one of the smallest.
That's not the first time that's been said on this show.
Both cattle prods and organs. Thank you very much. We have probably one of the smallest writing staffs of any show on the air right now. You know, The Simpsons is notorious for having like 15 writers on staff. We have three. Myself, Rob Hummel, and Jonan Vasquez. We've had a couple other people sort of rotating out. Roman Dirge was pitching a few ideas a while ago.
Another comic book artist, for those of our listeners who are keeping it score at home.
Exactly. For a while, we had on staff Frank Conniff, also known as TV's Frank.
TV's Frank. I noticed that on one of the episodes.
He's one of the funniest people I've ever met and a great guy. But
Mystery Science Theater 2000.
Oh, okay.
He went on to bigger things.
Really?
Yeah.
Bigger than you guys?
Yeah, much bigger.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
I know. Despite the fact that, like, we're really cool in the underground, you know, as far as Hollywood is concerned, cable animation really is a bit of a ghetto. and I love it. I mean, I absolutely love the show. But, I mean, prestige-wise and you know, financially wise, which is what drives, you know, agents and managers and big studios. I mean, really are at the bottom.
However, you know, cable animation, as you so dismissively call it, seems to be undergoing this, like, golden age wrapped in a renaissance sprinkled with ground beef, right? Like, right, yeah. Now, there's, like, you know, all of the best shows on TV, in my humble yet completely accurate opinion, like, all the best shows on TV right now are cartoons.
And absolutely.
And they're just not thinking ahead, because what's going to happen is Invader Zim is going to go for, like, 5 years, build a huge cult following, they're going to make a feature out of it, the feature's going to open to, like, $30 million, and you guys are all going to retire to giant levitating houses in Malibu.
Serviced by wavy goth chicks.
Yeah.
Oh, were that but true. No, I mean, what will happen is we'll get enormously successful, and Viacom will rake in all the cash. But no, I mean, it's you're absolutely right. I mean, there's never been sort of better stuff on cable and you know, in animation, and it's never been, you know, there has never been a better time.
No, it really is true. Like, I think of, like, classic, you know, classic eras in animation, or classic animated shows that have meant something to me. And other than perhaps, you know, the kind of the heyday of, like, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, when animation was this huge industry for movie shorts, for TV, and so forth, like, there doesn't seem to have been more. Like, yes, Rin and Stimpy was big and influential, but that was just one show.
Right.
And after, like, you know, Chris Felici got Chris'd off, like, there was, the show lost a lot of its...
It lost its spark.
Lots of spark.
Exactly.
Edge, yeah.
Exactly.
And you so know, the I golden mean, age of that I, show was very brief.
It was. And I think, you know, I mean, obviously, the Simpsons, you know, from an executive point of view, said, well, animation can work. Where I think we're living in, you know, the people who are working on our show now are a lot of people who were influenced by, like, you know, Craig Felici way back in the show. Not our show. I mean, you see very little, you know, there's absolutely no Ren and Stimpy style in our show.
No.
But, I mean, it's people who I think 10 years ago looked at that and said, like, oh, my God, I had no idea you could do this sort of thing. And, you know, we are lucky. We have, you know, I think a collection of the most absolutely demented and talented storyboard artists in Hollywood right now, or Burbank for that matter. And there, we also work on a show where the storyboard artists are given a lot of latitude to make jokes. I mean, a show like The Simpsons, it's all about the writing-driven stuff.
Right.
You don't do anything that's not in the script. We deliberately leave holes and visual gags, you know, and just describe sequences that we know that they're going to go nuts on. And all these people are both, you know, warped by Ren and Stimpy, and also huge, like, Japanese anime fans, and
right.
So you know, they're
definitely comes through, yeah.
Rockets and aliens and stuff like that, and that, you know, that sickening mix ends up on the screen, and everyone's happy, and then we go
happy
home.
As a pig in slop.
Exactly.
And another, I'm sorry to, like, totally monopolize the show.
No, you're not.
But another thing that I've noticed is how important, for example, the voice of Zim is for the humor of the show. Like, his delivery, the voice actor's delivery of the lines is really spectacular. It really brings out kind of a...
Oh, God, yes.
Inner humor of the writing. And so I'm wondering, do you guys have any interaction with the voice talent? Was this just a lucky coincidence?
It's both. I mean, Jonan has a lot of interaction with it's Richard Horovitz who's the voice of him, and he's, you know, a funny man to begin with. He's a short, goofy-looking guy, and I hope he never hears me say this, but he really just, I mean... 90% of Zim, the success of that character comes from him getting in the studio, you know, getting in the booth, shutting the door, and just, you know, going off into his own delirious world for a while, completely prodded on by Jonan, who encourages people to get the most extreme reads he can get out of them. And, you know, I as a writer don't, you know, Jonan does all the interaction. I know Richard, I've been in the booth, but it's not like, you know, I'll write stuff knowing full well that Richard is going to mutate them in very, very lovable ways. But the story behind that, originally they wanted for Jim's voice, Mark Hamill, you know.
No kidding.
Skywalker.
Yeah, because he did, worked on Gargoyles?
He worked on Gargoyles. He's the voice of the Joker on Batman, and for whatever reason that didn't come together. And,
well, I mean, as much as I like his voice work, I'm glad, because
absolutely. You know,
this guy's brilliant.
Yeah, Richard is absolutely brilliant, and I hope this launches him into someplace absolutely spectacular after this.
The heart of the sun.
I'd like to praise our guest because he gave 90% of the credit of the show to Horowitz. Mm-hmm. He clearly gave 40-50% of it to the storyboard artist.
Yeah.
Gave another 20% of it to the Koreans, right?
Right.
That doesn't leave a lot left over for the writers.
Jonan, yes.
Yeah.
That's up 215%, yes. I don't understand why you have a problem with this. I'm sorry.
I apologize for not comprehending
what are you,
your
Al Gore? Yeah, what's this with funny math there?
Yeah. we would be we should. Do you have any more questions about?
I have tons, but I should.
Well, I was going to say we would be remiss as co-hosts if we didn't try to use your privileged position in Jay Corey's life to fill out some of the gaps in the past and development of Jay Corey that would help explain some of his behavior today.
Corey, oh dear. I knew him during his undergrad days. Back when he was a young, alienated boy who used to lock himself in his closet with photos of Wesley Crusher. And
other than the age,
oh, you knew all
changed.
That.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, not much has changed.
I have nothing to add.
Excuse me. Burritos.
I have absolutely nothing to add. And you know about his time in the Merchant Marine, right?
Yeah.
In the Merchant Marines, as in physically in them, but not as a member.
I thought he was in the barrel all the time, so I never actually saw the Merchant Marines.
He was a full-on legitimate mascot on a ship. And he's got a lot more stories than I do.
We should point out to you that it is in your economic best interest to kiss up to everybody involved in Vader Zim. It is not in your best interest to withhold any story whatsoever about Corey.
Corey, do I have a single story about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, no.
I mean, I recall your leap into freakdom happened, you know, in your final stages of your Ivy League, beating. And I think I was not. I was there to just the lift off on the launch pad, and then you really just flowered into a complete level of superversity long after retreated into my own shell. Is that true?
That's actually, basically that's true. I think the show was doing really well when we were talking about Invader Zim. I'm not sure it's going to work.
Corey on that. It's not my show. I don't know your listeners, and I'm sure the fact that we aren't talking about jacking off or hermaphrodite
for Zim thing. We got an instant message, kind of an email thing. I don't know if you're familiar with computers.
That technology is just so wacky.
But someone has asked me if you would do a line from an old TV show. I'm not even going to tell you who the character is. Let's just see if you can do this cold. You ready?
Okay.
It's not Petticoat Junction. We just got the results back from the lab. The person supposedly drowned in a freshwater lake, but there's salt water in his lungs. What do you think, Quince?
Oh, I think it was murder, Sam!
That's it. That's all I have.
Wait, did you say Moiter?
That was the character talking.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes, when you become a character, you're no longer you. I mean, you are that person. That person lives and breathes.
Wow. What's it like to live on a boat?
Oh, I can't go back into that character again. It's too intense for me.
Come on, you can do it. That was no accident. It was a murder, cold-blooded murder.
I don't think I could.
He's not a faucet, okay. You can't just turn him on and off.
It was no accident. It was murder. See, that's as far as we can go.
I'll be completely satisfied if you just give us a little Shatner and then I'll.
I can't. No, I can't.
Can we live?
What possible Shatner could I do that everyone else hasn't already?
Make up a
novel.
Talk
about cartoons.
We humans need love.
Yeah, make up a novel.
Our ass, or
or this girdle really chafes.
How about
I've lost my
toupee
girdle.
Like fashion. What?
I said I've lost my toupee and girdle and can't leave.
Why not a rendition of some of Invader Zim's classic lines in Shatner's voice?
Oh, because I'd be fired immediately. Out of contempt.
speaking of legal liabilities and trying to bring the show back to the topic of sex. Well, just as so many of us are in the studio right now are fans of Corey and have our own little sexual fantasies revolving around him. I'd like to know if you are aware of the fact that there's actually a slash fiction community on the web based on Invader Zim. Are you familiar with slash fiction?
I'm familiar with the concept of slash fiction. I have to say, I haven't read a single word of Invader Zim slash
so
fiction.
So, for our listeners who aren't familiar,
it's free for you.
Slash fiction is fan fiction based on popular TV shows, but almost always involving gay sex between characters. Now, we should mention for those listeners of ours with delicate sensitivities, I don't know, that all the characters on Invader Zim are children.
Oh, right.
That's not true. One's a parent and one's an alien.
That's true. I am full of lies. Right. Thanks for pointing that out.
And for the record, Zim is in fact hundreds of years old.
Yes. Okay.
And still stupid.
And one's a robot.
And one's a robot. So, okay. In other words, almost none of the characters are children. But the two characters that all this slash fiction seems to rotate around in its miasmic toilet bowl-like swirl is Zim and Dib, of course. Their loves, their lives.
Right.
Their needs.
Right.
And I was wondering if you as a writer, just like the writers, for example, for Xena, responded to the internet community's desire for more subtext. If you guys are going to start, working in the gay subtext between Zim and Dib.
If Zim's wormy tongue is going to find his way into...
You mean, first of all, I am not going to rise to the obvious bait and make an anal probe joke. All right? That won't happen.
Oh, man, I was setting you up a softball, and you totally ignore it.
Yeah, that's not really Invader Zim style.
Look, if we're not Disney's Lloyd in space, we don't go for the cheap anal probe laugh.
Yeah. And besides, Invader Zim wouldn't stop at just one orifice.
Oh, God, no. No, and Zim would create new ones.
He'd make his own.
And to all the Nickelodeon executives, I didn't say that. But I've never read it. I think that there will be, in the future, absolutely no homosexual love between Zim and Dib. There's absolutely no heterosexual love on the show. And so I think Jonan is uncomfortable, with positive feelings enough, to take it into the realm of positive, yet progressive feeling. I think, progressive feelings, is probably asking too much.
Well, we can always hope that Gaz will teach, Zim what this human thing called love is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, because one of the things we tell writers when they come to pitch is that absolutely nobody on this show ever falls in love, ever. So don't pitch the,
What about Gur?
Gur is in love with everything within 3 feet of his vision at all times. So he's the one exception. But his love is a universal love, much like, Buddha's. So,
No
wonder the stoners love your show.
We have some listener mail, actually.
Oh, great.
We let people know weeks ago that you were coming on the show.
Oh, and they're sending the nude photos in already.
No,
we keep those for ourselves.
Just text. Some of these questions may get you fired, so feel free not to ask them.
Okay, naked text, huh?
So here's question one. Dear DJ 2000, that's the way that our male viewers always announce themselves. What would sex be like after the Urkan invaders take over our planet? Will we be their sex lives?
Hold on.
Will our sex lives involve far more tubes, articulated robot arms, and gadgets?
The short answer to your question is yes, but the long answer is actually, Urkans don't reproduce through sex. They reproduce through machines. My guess is that, would the Urkans invade, they would probably cap sort of life force essences upon the genitalia of all beings of Earth and, use that energy to power a giant neon sign.
Sweet.
But what the sign says, I can only speculate.
I want my giant penis-powered neon sign.
Exactly.
I love that.
Leave out the labia because, we believe in equal time.
Did you get that idea from, The Matrix Part 2? Because I think they're using that idea.
Really?
Instead of the whole battery thing that was so kind of technologically flawed in Matrix 1.
Oh, I felt the science of the Matrix was actually spot on.
Drawing power from... penises and vaginas isn't any less scientifically flawed, or am I missing some key aspect?
Well, no, that's because, for example, you could normally use cows for power instead of humans in the original Matrix.
Yeah.
But
right.
If, in fact, the power especially comes from our human genitalia, then no, you couldn't use cows or rabbits.
Yeah, I mean, the Urkans wouldn't use cows because they smell too funny.
Right.
And they would all be cycled into jerky, no doubt. There'd be just jerky farms in which the cows are squeezed out of these cyber, these synthetic wombs, spun very fast to age them quickly, and then turned immediately into jerky, I imagine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. Teriyaki-style jerky? Any particular flavor that they're going to go for? Yeah.
Oh, all flavors. I mean, you can't just have one flavor of jerky. You'd get tired.
That's right.
Cinnamon jerky?
Yeah. Cinnamon jerky, yes. Sour cream and onion jerky. Okay. One thing you'll discover about the tallest, the more episodes there are, is that they are completely their entire psyche resolves around the concept of snacks. Those two enormous pods on the sides of their spaceship,
mm-hmm.
Those are both filled with snacks.
We should point out the tallest are, in the universe Invader Zim, the rulers of the race that Zim comes from that's trying to take over the Earth.
Yes, the Urkans.
Well, so you guys are really playing up to your stoner audience then if you're making the invading race snackocentric, aren't you?
Absolutely. Although, that's all Jonan, and Jonan is, one of the straightest edge people you'll ever meet when it comes to that sort of thing. He doesn't drink. He doesn't, he's, I think, demented enough, and were he to actually go in that direction, it might break something in him. So, he himself eats a lot of snacks, and I think it comes from that.
That definitely comes out in his writing.
Hey, are you guys going to be collaborating with Matt and Ben?
I'm sorry?
You know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, I heard that you might be collaborating with their production company.
Oh, I'm not allowed to discuss that. Let me just say that, you know, we have something very exciting planned. I think you're all going to enjoy it. And whether or not it ever hits the air, everyone involved has been very professional and a joy to work with.
Sweet.
I'm sorry, I have no idea where that came from. By the way, you might want to mention, too, that the voice of the purple Almighty Tallis is voiced by Kevin McDonald of Kids in the Hall.
Yes, yeah.
Who's one of our favorite people to work with.
Cool.
Which is good because he has a recurring role, and if he was a pain in the ass, it would really suck.
Can I run another question by you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, Dear GJ 2000, did the writers and Vader Zim deliberately create Gaz as a budding goth sex symbol, or was it an accident? She's all my friends at my LAN parties can talk about these days.
Budding goth, yes, sex symbol. You'll have to ask Jonah. But it's definitely straight out of the head of Jonah Vasquez. And, oh, you will probably never see this. And it's not pornographic, so back off. But there is an episode in which we see, you know, projected, you know, Dib 20 years in the future. And they did do a character design for a grown-up Gaz.
Yeah.
And grown-up Gaz is hot.
Why will we never see it?
Because I was watching the show, and I think they were in a wide shot. They were standing next to him as he's opening the Dib Institute, you know, Professor Merritt and Gaz, and I think they're just cropped out of it. I mean, they're just – I know. I mean, maybe someone will someday leak that design to the Internet, but that person would not be me, as I do not leak things to the Internet.
Only radio.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something for your fans to drool over as I think about it.
Actually, if I can interrupt you for a question, like I would just – interrupt the viewer mail. So, again, with another cartoon on the show, Space Ghost to Ghost to Ghost, I remember actually Lance and I were once hanging out with my girlfriend and some of her female friends. We were watching the show, and like they all were speculating, oh, I'd love to write the creators of the show letters. You're looking at me funny, Lance.
Oh, I thought they were watching the Powerpuff Girls at the time.
Well, could have been the Powerpuff Girls, right? Like talking about, oh, we'd love to write the creators of the show letters. We think he's the ginchiest. We think his show is the greatest.
Right.
But he would just think that's stupid. And we were trying to explain, oh, my God, no. Like, this guy's probably a lonely, chubby geek slaving away in front of a typewriter. Mm-hmm. Like, he would love to hear from a bunch of, like, hot chicks who are fans of his show. But they, of course, never wrote him.
But we weren't talking about you being a lonely, chubby geek.
No. Clearly, Craig McCracken geek.
Craig McCracken is a super lonely, cool, chubby geek. But, no, I have never met Craig.
But so my extremely convoluted point was, like, do you get fan mail? Did the writers, did the show get fan mail from the expected, like, hot goth chicks?
What about Jonan, though? He must be drowning in hot goth chicks.
Jonan himself, Jonan is the one who gets the letters from hot goth chicks. In fact, he does get, I don't know if I'm spilling secrets, but, you know, girls, you know, in their underwear sending them pictures and, you know, hey, here's a picture of me, you know, in less than their underwear.
You could leak that to the Internet, you know.
I could have, but, you know, once you get them, they're completely indistinguishable from, you know, everything you would find on nakedgoth.com or whatever.
There's a nakedgoth.com and nobody told us.
Yeah, I, of course, use the term nakedgoth.com only for comedic purposes. not a lot of people on the show get fan mail. Jonan gets a ton of it. And I think in the fan mentality, you know, Jonan
writes every frame, writes every
game. Yeah, it pulls every frame from his body and, you know, and then transfers it to videotape. I mean, to a certain extent that's true because it really is his guiding, you know, quote-unquote vision. But he's, you know, his name up there, and he's the people I think people emotionally identify with. He's the one all the girls send the naked pictures to. I mean, no one ever writes to the writer saying, "I really love that pig episode," you know. But
I love the pig episode, although I'm not hot or a goth or a chick.
Well, you know, 0 out of 3 ain't bad. So
let's put that thought on hold and take a caller real quick.
Okay.
Hello, caller. Do you have a question, comment, or concern to share with us and the hot goth chick on the other end of the line?
Hello.
Is that you, Bjork?
Bjork is dead. I'm very sorry.
I guess the caller's not
there.
Wait,
caller, are you there?
Evidently not.
I scared the caller.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
It was all about
Bjork. We usually scare them off ourselves. You're just saving us the trouble.
I have one last piece of your mail. This comes to us from Squirrel Hill, which is a neighborhood in Pittsburgh, and it goes, I'd like to applaud your show for speaking to teens like me who are uncomfortable with the flamey gay stereotypes and are more into more masculine type. Having a gay character whose explicit goal is the conquest and subjugation of the entire human race goes a long way towards fighting pansy stereotypes.
I guess this comes back to, like, the slash fiction thing, right, where they believe.
Exactly. Well, I just want them to know that every person that they see on television is, in fact, gay.
Not Ellen.
Except Ellen. Ellen took the fall for everyone else. In fact, they don't let you within the city limits of Los Angeles without being gay. But no, thank you. Thank you very much for that note. I'll pass that on to Joan, and I'm sure he'll be very pleased about that. We really strive to break down frontiers.
Or very puzzled.
Yeah. I think you'll notice the strides we made about amputee characters. I think you'll be very happy about that.
And robot moms.
Yes.
You've been
That's a dwindling audience, and we think we can exploit it.
You've been a beacon of light for the robot moms out there who don't really find, ever since the cancellation of Small Wonder, like, who are our robot role models?
There are none. Until us.
Until you guys. Exactly.
Don't neglect the robot dads just because you have issues.
I don't want to get into that.
For our listeners who have no idea what we're talking about.
You're not alone.
Yes, the character Invader Zim doesn't have real parents. He has fake, crazy robot parents that fool the rest of humanity thinking he has actual parents.
Exactly. And we are talking about Invader Zim, Fridays at 9 p.m. on Nickelodeon.
Written by our guest, Eric Chuhar.
Well, I'm one of a few writers on the staff. But
send your fan mail to him.
So yeah, Eric Chuhart, is your name in the credits? I watched Planet Jackers, and I didn't see your name in the credits.
Write Planet Jackers.
Oh, is your name in the credits of episodes you write?
Yeah, and in fact, you'll see them at the beginning, while you're distracted by the pretty pictures.
I've seen his name in the credits many times.
Up, so.
Really? Yes, I recognize him.
Really?
Yes.
You guys, watch the credits and, memorize the names of writers that you might?
We love writers, right?
I've seen the episodes more than once, yeah. And you start to pick up details, take notes. I'm making my Eric Chuhart scrapbook.
And it's not like sitcoms where they sort of backload all the credits. Like with Invader Zim, it's right up there in front.
Making wallets out of skin and beadwork.
Did you write Eric's name on your binder 500 times? When you were
I wrote Eric and then my last name.
T-L-A.
Yeah. I'm painting his name in blood in my basement. Is that close enough?
Are you painting your name saying Mrs. Eric Chuhart? But no, I used to look at writers' names in the front of shows. You know, like, hey, did Glenn Morgan and James Wong write this X-Files? You know, it's that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, excellent call. Yeah.
My shouts of surprise and joy when I saw Frank Conniff's name, puzzled and troubled my friends until I explained, oh, yeah, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Exactly.
Oh, your shouts of joy are meaningless at this point, Dr. Sexopoulos.
They are. I realize that.
So I guess we've exhausted our audience, haven't we?
Well, I was going to say, we've had a request from the audience that you do Shatner singing Rocket Man.
I don't think that I could do anything with Shatner at this point.
30 seconds of Shatner doing Rocket Man?
That hasn't been done by every Catskills comedian.
It's true. It's a bit overdone.
What are you saying?
What about Spock singing?
Good enough for you?
What about Spock singing Rocket Man?
Yeah. Help me, Spock! But no, who is it? That's imitation of ancient Vulcan philosopher Sarek. To talk about Star Trek just for a moment, our script coordinator, who has actually written, who I co-wrote an episode with, which will be airing later in this year, and who's writing a couple episodes next year, is Danielle Koenig.
Really?
Daughter of Walter Koenig.
Daughter of Walter?
TV's Chekhov, who, as it turns out, is friends with Walter Koenig, is friends with Harlan Ellison.
Right.
And just Harlan and the Ellisons and the Koenigs apparently just had dinner the other night and found out that Harlan actually does watch Invader Zim.
No kidding.
I can't say I'm surprised. If there's any show that, matches his somewhat abrasive to humanity sentiment.
Mm-hmm. So are you guys going to do, I have no pig yet, I must scream?
I have no pig yet, I must scream. Can I write that down?
Sure.
If that turns up, I'm not giving you any credit.
That's fine.
It's too late. It's documented.
Yeah.
That's right. Saved forever on the internet.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, it's wonderful that there's something in life that Harlan Ellison enjoys.
I know. It's great. And I read all of his, when I was in high school and feeling weird and alienated, it was nice to read all of his stories that were all about weirdness and alienation. So, he can credit himself for now, obliquely what he sees on the screen.
Well, like I can say it's paid off big dividends on the screen on his other hand.
Thank you, Harlan. I owe it all to you.
Well, I have one other cool question, which departs a little bit from the topic, but it's something we've wanted to talk. We've talked about on the show from time to time.
I have never had that up my ass.
We have photos.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, we didn't mention your ass.
I thought it was implied. Go on.
It's implied in everything that we talk about.
So your name is attached to a documentary about Burning Man.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is.
And I was curious, again, we only have 3 minutes probably, but... give us the rampant sex in Burning Man
scene. It is let me think. It's not as rampant as you would think. I mean, it's very easy if you're a woman to get laid. If you're a man, you still have to work. And I will say to anyone who's going to go to Burning Man looking to get laid, number one, don't look hungry, and number two, go with the moment. And if you're gay, you'll have no trouble at all.
Really? Go with the moment. That's enigmatic advice that just screams for more detail.
Well, yeah. So far, nothing you've said about Burning Man differs from, you know, the sort of advice you need at any bar to get laid. You can do it for easy if you're a woman. For a man, you have to work at it. If you're gay, no problem.
Exactly. Well, it just goes to show Burning Man is a microcosm of the universe.
So it's like a dusty, hot bar.
It's a dusty, hot bar.
Where
you can actually know what the women's nipples look like before you take them home.
How are the Olsen twins represented symbolically in this microcosm of the universe?
The Olsen twins are represented by the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I think the comparison there is obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
It's working for me.
I'm trying to come up with more Burning Man advice, but all I can say is go out there yourself and, you know.
Well, we were thinking of advice. We were thinking of freakish things you'd seen or experienced.
Oh, I was going to tell you the most freakish thing I've seen. I was driving on a rolling living room when we were recording a live talk show. And I think at the time I was dressed as Mr. Sulu, so there's some Star Trek geekdom going on there. And as I was walking by, there was a naked woman on a pair of stilts leaning up against the streetlight that was there. And, God, I hope a Nickelodeon executive never reads a transcript of this. leaning up on this naked woman was this sort of bearded hippie gentleman with his mouth, planted where one might expect one's mouth would go on a woman on stilts. And this was just sort of on the public thoroughfare, and she had a look on her face that said, wow, I never expected this when I got up this morning. And that was I'm glad I still got in catalog. That is officially probably, you know, the weirdest sex act I've ever seen at Burning Man. And there's actually, I mean, it's not just walking down the street, you know, people just engaged in fornication rolling in gleeful piles across the desert. I mean, there is still some sense of, courtship.
They do fornicate in the streets, just on stilts. That's the
only. Yeah, that's it. That's actually, in the 6 years I went, that's the only act of fornication in the streets I ever saw. So,
technically, it wasn't fornication, so.
No, it's not. So, you know, there's no legal issue.
I think technically that might be sodomy, actually.
Eric, really? I'm going to ask you, we have to do our station identification. I'm going to ask you, can you say this is WRCT Pittsburgh as Mr. Sulu?
I could do it as distinguished Asian actor George Takei. What are the callers again?
WRCT Pittsburgh.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Steady as she goes.
I think that was the evil Sulu from with the goatee. Exactly.
Oh, my.
Anyways, I hate to be the controlling one, but that's as good a note as any to leave off the show. Mr. Trueheart, Captain Trueheart, even though it's been largely an asexual evening for reasons of saving your job.
And I appreciate that.
You've been an excellent guest.
Well, I'm happy to be on, and I'm happy to do Corey a favor, and I'm happy to talk to anyone who wants to talk about Invader Zim Fridays at 9 at Nickelodeon.
Yeah, thanks for suffering through our fanboy questions.
Yes.
Oh, no, believe me, I've been a fanboy myself. I understand. Brotherhood, man, rock on.
Word. So, once again, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
And you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Good night. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week, Tuesday 11.